don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
The Super 8s, more like the Snoozer 8s.
Can we do that intro again?
No.
We're not going with that intro, are we?
The Snoozer 8s. We've waited all our lives for a round robin All Ireland football quarterfinal competition, and that's what we were treated to last week. Also, after possibly the best summer of hurling of all time, hurling fans have decided they no longer want to go and see hurling matches, as 7.5 people turned up to both All-Ireland hurling quarterfinals at the weekend. You're very welcome along to the so-called Weaker podcast. You know what the problem is, lads?
No, go on.
That intro.
Morris, where are the
you
so-called...
Can't get away with this.
The problem is, there's no so-called Weaker counties anymore.
I would go the other way and say that every...
I think anyone who watched Kerry might beg to differ.
Yeah, exactly.
We're sitting here talking about the greatest championship of all time. We're loving everything about it. And the so-called Weaker podcast exits stage left, as they tend to do at this time of year. And everything turns to shit. You're very welcome to the so-called Weaker podcast. Mick McCarthy here alongside Mark Farrelly and Morris Brosnan, both of whom already want to kill me. We are 1 minute into this show.
Apologies for that intro, listener.
I think the
what was so wrong with the intro?
I think it reflects the standard of football from the weekend.
The Snoozerites.
So you wouldn't get that from the likes of Gavin Cooney if he was in that. I think the Super 8s needs more Carlo and more Graham Brody. And who else? What other things have we championed? More Michael Ryan.
Damien Mulligan.
Westmead hurlers should be in the
the Super 8s. I agree with that. Yeah. More Carlo footballers and hurlers, I would say. Anyway, we do have... it wasn't the most appealing start to the so-called Super 8 series. Super 8, I actually went with there, Mark, almost accidentally. I think you're probably right about why that should be called Super 8, but we won't get into that again. Four games in Croke Park, none of which really set the world on fire. I suppose Tyrone probably the most impressive performers. Galway probably with the biggest win. Monaghan got the job done against Kildare, and Dublin did what we expected them to do against Donegal, and we're left with actually what should be something amazing this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of the weird part about it all is because now we're into do or die knockout in small venues like Oma, like Hyde Park, like
Clonus,
Newbridge.
Clonus isn't that small. But.
No, Clonus is pretty big, actually. Yeah, but Clonus for Monaghan and Kerry in a base in where Kerry could go out of the All Ireland Championship in Ulster for the first time
excited.
Since 1930. Apparently,
yeah, was it 35?
35, maybe they lost
Cavan
to Cavan.
Against Kerry, yeah.
In the then not Kingspan.
Oh no, Niall McCoy, I think actually had that stat.
PJ Brown gave it to me, but there you go.
Ah, PJ Brown passing off Niall McCoy's work as his own.
Don't think he was.
Can we just, after this weekend, can we agree that these games do not belong in Croke Park? Like, even the good game, which was Kildare Monaghan, the atmosphere sucked the life out of the game. It was haunting. There's no involvement to the crowd. You don't get that sense on television of, you know, a cheer or kind of a rounding applause because it's so empty. Like, you're playing games in half-empty stadiums. For me, this is what was the biggest takeaway from that weekend was that Croke Park is not apt to host these games.
My thing is, though... Is it that these games don't belong in Croke Park because they're Super 8 games and it's not the Ireland semi-final yet? Or is it that the quality, that why do they not belong in Croke Park? Why is there no one showing up to Croke Park? That's the issue. It's not that, we were never going to get, like, I mean, years ago you would have had people, it would have been a sellout for that.
That's for
Dublin
do or die
game,
games. But for, it's
not
different.
Even. The Ulster final, I know it's probably the Ulster final is different as well because it was, it's... Tyrone Armagh at the height of that rivalry, but like think of the crowds you used to have for that. You would have had bigger crowd. You had far bigger crowds for quarterfinals as well back years ago when it was, you know, small counties. You could have someone like Fermanagh against Armagh, I think it was, in the quarterfinal 08 or so.
Although, like, even I was there when Cavan came up to play Kerry in that quarterfinal. Their occasions, a sense of like, this is our day out. There's another two on the hand for... Even the teams bought into that. You could see Roscommon succumb by the end of that game. It's like, their mind was in Hyde Park by the end of the game. Like, there's a sense of that loss of kind of a last chance of something on the line here, like it that transmits to the crowd, and you got a feeling for that. Like, there was no way either of those games were ever going to be a sellout. Like, the fact that the World Cup is on the whole,
yeah.
Like, I've worked every Sunday when there's football on in Croke Park this year, so that's including league finals, that's including the Leinster final, Joe McDonagh, and this was the first time on my commute into work where there was no noise out of Croke Park. It was the first time I was walking in, and I was almost worried, like, did something get cancelled? I was worried walking in during the first game. I was like, okay, they're not playing right now. It was weird. It was so weird. There was nobody around Drumcondra. It was dead. It was the first time I've ever seen it. The sense of occasion is gone because you're playing it in a stadium. If those 30,000 were in Newbridge, there would have been a feel about the place. There would have been a roar. Yeah. That would have transferred for the viewer at home. But it's lost because you're playing it in a half-empty stadium where nobody cares about. I just think, like, and again, like, the even for the Dublin game, like, it's the same takeaway. Like, at the very end of that game, the reason, you know, whatever happened at the end of that game with Dublin keeping possession, if that was, for example, 2014, Donegal were, I think they were up by 5 points. And the jeers from the Dublin fans that day, it was like, there was a real kind of sense of getting on their back. And that's gone because it's Dublin keeping possession and their fans start olaying their own passes by the end of it. You know what I mean? Like, the sense, if those games are brought out of Croke Park and you're packed out smaller stadiums and smaller towns, I think there would have been a bigger sense of occasion. You would have, I think, if that enhances the experience, I would have thought.
Yeah.
I think everybody's on that boat now. I don't think there's anybody's going
to. Definitely. And if they are to be in Croke Park, possibly the last round of the games, and I think it's something that they will change. And something I think it's probably a little bit unfair for us to be so negative after the first year of a 3-year plan that will obviously evolve as well. But we will remain to be negative, and we will talk about... If football is in such a bad state, they tell us it is on RT every single time they cover a game. We're generally here defending it. This week, we're not really even in that business. But if it is so bad, how can we fix it? Each of us are going to take one aspect, one rule change, one something, and apply it and tell the listener and each other why that will make the game of Gaelic football a better game.
Yeah, I think there's a difference as well, and it's a really key one in that... There's a difference between not criticising the likes of Carr or whoever it is, or Fermanagh, for playing a defensive structure and putting 50 men behind the ball and it being terrible, making the game terrible to watch. Not criticising them for doing it, but at the same time saying that this probably isn't good for the sport or as a spectacle. Do you know what I mean? It's like they're playing within the rules, they're doing what they need to do to win, but at the same time, how can we ruin that on them? Not that, but how can we, you know, improve the sport as a spectacle? They're two separate things. It's perfectly fine to say this is terrible to watch.
Yeah.
At the same time, say fair play to you for doing it.
We'll get to that in a couple of minutes. We're also going to have some very interesting stats from Shore, official statistics partner of the GAA, on some of those Super 8 games and just how they were won and lost. We'll talk a lot about the hurling quarterfinals that were played at the weekend as well. We now know the semi-final lineup. And we will talk to you a little bit about a story that we had on site on Bosley yesterday. A junior Westmead footballer emailed us in to talk about his frustrations with the club game and general fixture changes and the way club players are generally being treated. That, I mean, I was talking to somebody involved in the CPA and they're like, this is, you know, like just one of many, many, many stories that we're going to hear and we will be hearing about between now and the end of the year. And there's a general level of fed upness, if that's a word, which it's not, among the rank and file GAA players as the championship kicks on. In this, don't forget, the championship that is supposed to be the shortened season to help the club player, and it doesn't seem, at least at this stage, to be working out that way. And, of course, we'll guess the spreads, as we tend to do on the show now, for week two of the Super 8. Mark, are you worried about Morris's insane run of form in this competition? You beat me last week, but he's basically unbeatable.
Yeah. I wouldn't say unbeatable. We'll see. I think I could pull it back this week.
Morris, you confident in the new rules?
Without any... Oh, yeah. That actually set my mind.
Yeah.
I feel good.
Okay, fine. Okay. Well, let's get on to how we fix the game then, Mark. You were the one who thought about this. So tell me, what exactly is your one and only You're only allowed to do one thing now. What does it do? You have to completely transform the game. What changes things?
I have tested this out myself numerous times, many times. In fact, I would say from the age of 11 up until I was 26, I think I may have played one 15-a-side match in Gaelic football. So my proposal is that we change Gaelic football to 13-a-side. And I proposed that about 10 years ago and nobody was listening to me, partly because who the hell would have been listening to me then? Especially whatever would listen to me now, no one's listening to me then. But it would instantly, like, it just, it's the simplest thing to try to address it. Like, so the problem is game is too congested, basically. Everyone's, you know, you've got 29 players in one half of the field more often than not, nearly in some, like in terms of the games that it happens in, especially this year, it seems to be everyone has just gone, right, let's put everybody behind the ball rather than put 14 behind the ball. This basically means that you've just got less players. The 13 side means you've got less players on the pitch, which means that you're going to have to rethink many lads you bring back, because you might not have as many support runners coming up if you only got 13. But also, if you do bring everybody back, there's four players less to clog up that area, which means there's going to be more space and more chances of a man getting away from a sweeper and the man that's marking him and the third man that's covering. Also, you don't need 13. You don't need 15 aside. You haven't needed 15 aside for a long, long, long time. Like, players nowadays, obviously at intercounty level, their physique, their fitness, they can go up and down all day long. There's no need for 15. But I played underage from under 14s up. We played full size pitch 11 aside under 14. Now that is a step too far. I remember scoring a goal one day where I caught the ball at the far dugout from the goals we were playing into, and turned around and I was 1-on-1 with the goalkeeper. So that was like 80 yards. I had to run straight through. Like, I mean, there was a lot of thoughts going through my mind as I run up the field. Do I go bottom corner, top corner, go around them, do whatever. But aside from that, then under 14s, under 16s, minor, junior B, 13 aside. And it was always automatically more entertaining, because it's even easier. If you're in the full forward line, a two-man full forward line, you have more space to move into.
Can I just interrupt there, because I want to know how this is going to specifically change the current intercounty game, right? So forget about your underage. No, I mean this seriously. Forget about your underage experience and football, and like junior football and cabin and stuff, because it's actually irrelevant, because nobody played that way regardless of how many was on the pitch. So my thinking, my guess, and I kind of want you to tell me why this wouldn't be the case, is things might not be as congested, but it doesn't change the game. Players, they play 12 men or 13 men behind the ball instead of 15 men behind the ball. They might play 11 defenders instead of 13 defenders. You know, so there's still very little space in there. There's no such thing as a two-man full forward line instead of a three-man full forward line, because there's no such thing as a three-man full forward line.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but my thinking on it would be, this is a small change that doesn't, you know, the way, like, say, I don't know what proposals you have coming down the line, but like things like, how's the referee going to control this? How are players going to know, blah, 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 if you can't go back into your own half, all these different things. This is really simple. It's just have less players on the field and it'll be less congested. Okay. And there may be secondary things you need to do on top of that.
But you're not allowed to do them now.
But I'm only allowed to propose one thing. And that would automatically, like, I mean, it's just simple physics. Yeah. It'd be automatically make the game less congested, could be less players in the pitch.
When there's a man sent off in a game, or when, like, there's a fight in the first 10 minutes and two people are sent off, does it necessarily mean an more open game at the moment?
Probably not, no. I haven't seen.
I think the problem, to move on to my own suggestion, the problem is,
when football becomes boring, when Gaelic football becomes, is when you see one team with a lot of bodies behind inside their own 45 and another team hand passing the ball over and back or going backwards, or not, there's no emphasis for them to go forward, and the other team, there's no press, so it just becomes a really boring spectacle, kind of a keep ball that's going on for ages. And I don't think, even if there's less bodies, that's going to change, because even if you've got 12 men behind the ball, teams aren't pushing up on that, so there might be less space, but there still is 12 versus 4, so they still have men outside. What I think needs to happen, my suggested rule change, is that it's so simple, it's so easy to police. Same thing as they do in basketball. As soon as you cross the halfway line, you can't go back. So you stop this stupid thing of people hand passing from 145 to the other. There's an emphasis on teams to actually go. And then, because you can't go back after you cross halfway line, there's pace. All of a sudden, we're going to get these, like, the Jim McGuinness's team of 2014 were entertaining because they broke at real pace and there was a lot of scores. You got high scoring games. When it became dull was when it became this keep ball thing. One team allowed the other team to reset. You're waiting for ages. They're going backwards, forwards, sideways. There's never any emphasis to get forward. But if there's an emphasis that as soon as you cross halfway line, you can't go back. One team has to press. They have to press because they know that it's like having a sideline at the back. So they know if we force them back, we turn them over. So then the other team also has an emphasis to attack with pace. Because, and it's the referee has no problem policing that. He's not trying to... You don't have to introduce another referee. It's just so easy to police. All it is, as soon as you cross halfway line, you're not going back. So there's no more sideways. Like, Johnny Johnson's role becomes redundant because he can't pass the ball backwards or sideways. All of a sudden, you have
God
to...
God, he really has an in for Johnny Johnson, doesn't he?
Yeah, loads of players. People are, the Johnny Johnson role has kind of become kind now. It's like, loads of people have done this before him. I don't know why, just because he moved out from Cora forward, he seems to have gained infamy for it. I've thought about that rule, right? And I don't think it solves it at all. Because... There's two problems.
One, there is no halfway line.
One, Donegal were really entertaining to watch. Yeah, that's one issue. Firstly, Donegal were really entertaining to watch doing that. I fully agree with you. They were the most entertaining team to watch in the championship, I think, the year they won it. They were just a blanket defence, blah, blah, blah. They were real great counter-attacking team.
Wow, they were like...
Every single team tries to do that now, right down to club level. It's transition speeds, as we talk about, and getting up the field. The problem is that other teams have cottoned on to that, and... They're so quick to get back. It's not that other teams aren't trying to get up the field at pace. It's like if you're Tyrone, that's not going to solve anything against Tyrone because Tyrone have no interest in trying to win the ball off you in your own half.
But
they lose the ball and you go on the attack, all the Tyrone players just turn their head and they sprint back faster than you can move the ball into their own defence. The other thing is, will it not just lead to teams giving away the ball more? Because if you can't go back the field into your own half, all you're doing is you're just forcing a man then to kick a pass that isn't on, and then they lose the ball and it's gone off the pitch.
Well, it does. That happens. Might speed things up a little bit though and have more possessions in a game. And the one thing, like I would say, is I was going to say, and I'm not going to now, I was thinking about a shot clock, like maybe like a minute long shot clock or something like that. And ultimately what I thought is, do you know what? It's not going to solve any of the defensive football. It's going to lead to worse attacking football, snapshots, and probably a lower scoring game. And we don't really want to see that. The one thing that is good about football at the moment is the amount of scoring in it. So I think that it needs to be something that actually applies to the team without the ball rather than the team with the ball, in my opinion. I don't know if anything that we do for a team with the ball changes 15 men behind the ball or 13 men if Mark has his way.
But is it like are we trying to reward play or is it trying to make the boring parts of football right now less prominent? So you reduce the amount of time that people are just keeping the ball. So
it's like, not even boring play. It's nothing play.
Yeah.
It's play that I could go out and do tomorrow, you know, if I got fit. So I actually couldn't do it tomorrow, but maybe in like, you know, 6 months.
You mentioned like Tyrone, for example. If this was induced as a rule, there's now an emphasis or even an onus on Tyrone to actually press because they know if we could force him back to halfway line, we have a turnover there. And if there's an increase in turnover, so what? Like the turnover just means more... Each team, like it doesn't hamper either team because they're going to turn over them both teams. It's the same rule for everybody. It's just you've got there's an onus on you to attack with pace, and then if it breaks down, there's an onus on the other team. We can press now, and if we can turn them over, and then you get if a team wants to counterattack and play like that, they can do that. Or if you want to leave, teams will start leaving players forward because they know we get that into our half. If we get a quick turnover, we can't go backwards. So there's an onus on us to attack here. It affects both teams equally, obviously, as rulers tend to do.
I don't know. I think it's still like. Everyone will end up playing like Tyrone. Because Tyrone are an example of that team. Like Tyrone don't really pass the ball around. And they're bad to watch because some Tyrone games, I mean, it's very hard to say Tyrone, harsh to say and Tyrone the bad to watch after scoring 424 and 320 in the last two games. But it's their defensive structure against teams, say the Tyrone Cavan game that was awful, was two are playing the same way. And they're both then just sitting back and allowing you to play in front of them. Whereas Tyrone don't generally play in front of a mass defence because when they get it, they're trying to run up the field as quick as possible and get it. So that's what teams will be trying to do. So it just end up...
So in that example, like say the Cavan Tyrone game, when there's a turnover, as there was a lot of times, the emphasis on Cavan isn't to pass it into... Like I'm not picking on him, but to pass into Sean Johnson and him to hold the ball and wait for Tyrone to set. It's for them to attack with pace. It's to go. All of a sudden, you reward players who are going to carry the ball hard, who are going to attack. If you kept players in their half... It's in your emphasis to do that because you have to, the onus is on you to attack the pace because if you let them come back and get set, you're screwed, you're snookered. So there's a, there's an onus on you to to turn over quickly. You have to go quickly, and that becomes more like, it's just a natural cause of that would be that it becomes more entertaining. It's such a, it's really simple. It's such a small tweak. It, the game itself, everything we love about the game remains the same.
Like, as in you're saying, like I'm saying, it's too hard on attack, harsh on attacking teams because all these players they're still behind the ball and the attacking team will just end up giving it away. But then maybe it has to be harsh on attacking teams so that they are forced into transitioning quicker. But I just think people are already trying to transition as quickly as possible. It's like, it's only worst case scenario they end up passing it around when they get caught and some pass doesn't come off or something. What about, no, sorry, Mike, you go on with yours. I had another random idea that no one's suggested yet. But
three players must be inside the opposition 45 at all times. And I know that's not the newest idea in the world, and I've gone through all the fandangle different ideas, and I genuinely think this is the best because it empties out the fence a little bit. It like empties out the, you know, in your more or less in the same way as you're talking, right? It also gives a much better counter-attacking possibility, the possible odd long ball in the game of football, you know, maybe like a 70-yard crossfield pass or something like that. You know, you see, like, I know it's a competitive sport, much easier to move the ball, but you see some of the passing, the crossfield passes from Limerick against Kilkenny at the weekend. You know what I mean? Like, what we just love to see. I know we do nice foot passing in football, but we just had to see an extra 20 yards in them sometimes. Anyway, that's one another thing. And then I think probably the most important part of that actually is that because of needing to mark up at the back with those players, and it, I think it just takes away some of the numbers of everybody being available to pass these balls around endlessly in attack as well. You know, that there's always that man coming from behind, no matter what, to give you the bailout when you look, when you've run into a little bit of trouble, turn around, give it to the full back, he'll give it back to the cornerback, and so on and so forth. So I think if you're keeping three men up at all times inside the 45, now they don't have to be on the edge of the square, you know, but they just have to be, and an easy enough one to police as well. It's a line across the pitch. It's only three people, easy enough to see if they're there. In defense, you're walking away. It's up to you. Same as offside rule. I feel sometimes when we're discussing these things, we're talking about like as if it's the most complicated thing in the world that when you're tracking back and a player is making a break, that you see a line coming up in front of you and you're not supposed to know who's around you and where's the stop. Like, I don't think that's that difficult a thing to do or enforce, and especially if you become used to it over the course of a year or so.
I think it is. I think you definitely could. You couldn't.
You think
have
it's hard to stay to have three people staying inside the 45?
No, but it's not very hard in theory. If it was a sort of a like playground rules kind of thing, of like, ah, come on now, hold on. Like, if you're tracking the play, if you're tackling the player, you're not going. You can't keep your eye on where the 45 line is.
Of course you can. You know where you are on the pitch.
You can't. You're looking at the man and the ball. You're not looking to see your cross line, and especially if you're running for a ball. If you're running for a ball,
then that's up to your teammates to get in behind. Like, why is if they're running with the ball that far back, why is there nobody up there anyway? You know what I mean? If you're tackling a man on the 45, then surely there should be some people behind you. You're talking about a running play out of defence. You know, it doesn't have to be up to the tackler to be inside the 45. There's other people. I'm not talking about about a designated three players. I'm talking about any three players at one time.
Maybe someone going back in. I definitely think you shouldn't have it for when you have possession. You can go wherever you want. Because, like, you're making a run for a ball. So you do, you know, the Andy Moore run for the full forward.
Yeah.
He's coming tearing out. The ball's hopping in front of you. You could be at the 21, the 45, doesn't matter what line you're crossing, you're not looking at it. Looking at the ball. I have a man breathing down my neck, I have to catch this ball. You're not going to go, oh, I have to stop here now because I'm coming to the 45.
How come basketball players know where the 3-point line is?
Because they're not.
Are they not looking at the ball or the defence or anything? They're looking at 10 things at once. They know what they're doing.
They're in,
and so do footballers.
They're not, like basketball generally, you're either in possession, needing to know where the 3-point line is because you're going to shoot. Which is different to making a run for the ball. And even if they are making a run for the ball, they usually like are making a 5-yard dash and then they're standing going, here, I'm here for the ball now. They're not coming at flat out speed at 33 or 4 kilometres an hour coming tearing out, going, I need the ball, I need to attack it. If I stand up, my defender, because they're not under this onus to have these men inside their own 45, can run out in front of me and get the ball.
I also think like there's a, I'm just thinking about the Galway Kerry game because I can't get it out of my head. And like both teams played with 3-4s and up. Like Galway, like that's the thing about Galway. They actually do play with 3-4. Like, it's why this myth about Galway. Like they, Burke, Comer and Shane Walsh, they played with 3 forwards up. I don't have the, heat maps in front of me, but I'm certain they played with three forwards for the majority of the game, and it didn't.
Galway also pressed as well.
They did, yeah. And like, and I think Kerry could not have set up a better way than to play into Galway's hands that game. But that also, I don't think that game was necessarily systems that was a problem. It was just a basic lack of skills. Like that was
And it was piss and rain as well. And like, there's lots of things about that game that I don't think were. I don't think we're thinking about how do we change Gaelic football because of a Galway-Kerry game.
No.
And that was probably bad,
I think,
you know?
Like, and that might, like the it probably is worth at some point mentioning that. Like, there's this, like, mass hysteria after this weekend. Like, one game was good, one game was decent until the last 20 minutes, and there's two bad games. It wasn't awful, and certainly, like, no need to, you know, have a mass hysteria.
No need to come up with a load of ideas on how to change the rules of the game. I'll flag about it or anything.
But I think like so it does happen a lot that you would still have three forwards up like Galway or Kerry do, and like I don't know if that's like, does it improve just to have an emphasis on them to do it? I don't know like I don't know.
Do you think one of the problems with Gaelic football is regardless of just like the mass defence, almost hides it, but zonal defence even is nearly is what makes it really difficult. So even if you only have eight players back, if they're not running around and the man isn't, they're not getting led astray by the man making the dummy run.
Yeah.
It's very hard to control. It's like a kick, it's like kick out strategies. If you push, if your midfielders push up, say, playing 4-4 formation or something for kickouts, you automatically can't do short kickouts. And the midfielder doesn't have to track anyone or anything. It's just standing in that space.
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of it probably is just a. It's minor tweaks or minor. Yeah. Like, it's just getting used to things the way they are. I mean, The reason I would say, Morris, you're talking about the three-man Galway for forward line, I don't think that discounts my idea, because I personally think that might have been just a game that wasn't that exciting. But if I see Galway Kerry again, I'm going to get excited about it. I'm going to watch it. I'm talking about something like we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, where we were talking about Tyrone having literally the 15 men back. And I can't remember who it was playing against, and we were talking about them just passing it was Cavan playing the ball across for 10 minutes. You know, I think it ended up being 100 seconds or something like that, where ultimately they gave away free and nothing happened. And it was just boring to watch. And it's kind of stripping down all the, let's face it, the nonsense that we're getting in the negative press, and saying that sometimes there is just, like, for the casual fan, sometimes the game can be hard to watch at the moment. In general, the game's healthy. And, like, we've had brilliant All-Ireland finals, brilliant All-Ireland semi-finals. We've had unbelievably high scoring, as we talked about last week, you know. So there's not this massive issue. And games can be kind of not as exciting as we want them to be, like Galway and Kerry. But ultimately, you know, I'd still like to watch both of those teams, you know. But so maybe there is an overreaction.
And it's also a problem that the best stories of games this year haven't been on television, so we didn't get to see Waterford or Leitrim or Carlow against Kildare. None of those games were televised, so we missed out on all those narratives, all massive, high-scoring, entertaining games that we kind of missed. And it.
But what is the issue then? Why is there that general prevailing sense out there, if games are more high-scoring than ever, right? If All-Ireland finals have been close and exciting. So we have all these things, but people aren't enjoying the game, at least in their heads, as much as they used to. And it's because it's probably happening at a slower pace in general for bursts of speed that have been quicker than ever.
It's, you know? Yeah, I mean,
but I think that isn't as good to watch as...
And there's also just the basic element of like human psychology. Like, people are averse to change. They don't like to see their old traditional hit and hope, who 15, go out and play your ball and beat your man, that's all it takes. Like, they don't like to see that abandoned. They don't like to, like, there's an element to that in everything. But I don't, as we mentioned, like, you could have made whatever changes you want to some of those games at the weekend. Like, the Galway and Kerry game was a bad game because the basic skills weren't executed. Like, the amount of hand passes that went astray, balls being kicked out of our sidelines. Like, Kerry's tackling was so poor, like so poor. That's where the game was won or lost. And then beyond that, there was other elements that just went totally wrong. Like, it's one of those weird situations where you'd want to understand how their management were thinking.
Yeah.
I'd like to just quote a poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow about Gaelic football and the state of modern Gaelic football. I think this is the issue. There was a little sport which had a little ball right in the middle of the pitch. When it was good, it was very good indeed. But when it was bad, it was horrid.
Very well said.
Apt.
And don't
forget
that
the good games are still great, but the bad games are atrocious.
Yeah, and the three of us have been asked for one way in which we would immediately improve the game, and none of us have agreed with each other, which shows you the quandary that the GAA are in at the moment.
His high is dropping in. The goal goes over the bar and the sides are level. We're supposed to have impartial journalists here around us. That's the cheer you have from all of them. Colin Walsh steadies himself, takes the kick, and the ball goes over the bar. For Monaghan takes the kick, ball drops in high. And the ball is over the bar, and they're now leading by 3 points. 3 points separating the teams here.
Up the back door.
And the kick out will come.
He's going to go for a kick. That could be a tremendous goal if he lands it. Does he land it? He does. He sends it in.
So it might not have been the most super of Super 8 week one debuts, but there were some interesting things that happened over the course of the weekend. Mark, you've been looking at some statistics provided to us by Shore, official statistics partner of the GAA.
Yeah, well, there was one thing that was interesting was the fact, like, I know you're always on why he's always on the kickouts, but they play such a major role in Gaelic football right now.
I don't always say why are we always on about them, but just sometimes I think there must be something else that we can talk about that isn't just kickouts.
Like, it's the start of every single attack.
It is.
Really. Like, apart from giving away the ball and trying to transition and from turnovers, it's transitioning from kickouts. And I think you could see it. It was so blatant in the Donegal-Dublin game. The Dublin never gave away a kickout. Rarely. They won 23 out of their 25 kickouts. Donegal, on the other hand, only won 15.
Out of
25. So, like, you're just... You're straight away operating. I think it was 3 points Dublin got off the back of those.
Yeah, that's what Shore gave us there, that Dublin got 3 points, I think.
Off the back of Donegal's lost kickouts.
And exactly, that's not to mention
the extra energy and everything that you expend by trying to win the ball back for the other 7 kickouts they lost. And also the fact that when you do win the ball back, then Dublin have pushed up on you and it's very hard to get out of your own defence. It's just such a thing. Like, for the Monaghan, Dublin... Even Galway to a lesser extent, they're probably not as good, but Monaghan and Dublin with Beggan and with Cluxton, it just have such a big advantage over the other teams straight away.
I think Galway definitely have, like, I thought Rory Lavelle was phenomenal at the weekend. And it, again, you're talking about, like, kick-off strategies as Mick Rose's eyes. Like,
I'm not. A little bit.
It's another element of, like, how, it's why I'd actually kind of be slightly concerned about Kerry, like, everything that could go wrong did go wrong for Kerry, and Galway still.
It's actually, if you look at them,
like, they pushed up on their kickouts, they pushed up on the Galway kickout, and they had an unbelievably well orchestrated press, and then 3 times gave away a free for pushing on the back in the midfield. It just defied belief. Like, you'd be, if you're management, you'd be tearing your hair out to see that. Like, so Galway of,
I have it here. The Galway won 15 out of 21, so they only lost 6, whereas Kerry won 26 out of. Sorry, 117 out of 26, so they lost 9.
And that's not as big a gap, though, as between the 2 and 10 in the Dublin game.
It's not
game,
a big
you know?
Gap, but if you look at every team that lost versus the team that won, right?
They won the more kickouts.
Niall Morgan, another one we didn't mention. Tyrone, great kickout strategy, brilliant goalkeeper kickouts, beat Roscommon. Monaghan beat Kildare. Galway beat Kerry. Dublin beat Donegal. Every single one of them. This is why the kickouts are so important. They all have, they're probably the 4, bar maybe Brody as well, say put him in. 5 best goalkeepers for kickouts and start and set. If you call your kickout a set piece for an attacking set piece, they're the 5 best out in the country.
Yeah.
How much does the other team have to play in this, though? I mean, so we're saying that Dublin are great at kickouts. There's a reason Donegal lost 10 of theirs as well. You know, like, that's, it works both ways. Your kickout strategy has to be stopping the opposition kickouts as well, and some teams are much better at that than others.
Yeah, and it's Dublin forcing, like, Dublin are so clever with their kickout. They play 3. Tyrone are the same, by the way. Like, they play 3 inside forwards, 4 long 45, and 4 in midfield. And all of, if you're like, that was Paddon's first time in Croke Park. He's looking out at a wall of blue jerseys, and like, he panicked. Like it happens. It's psychology. Like, he kicked the ball out of the sideline twice. He doesn't do that unless he's looking out at this wall of Dublin, they can't see a man free. Like, it's that's Dublin. And again, with Galway, like, Kerry had a really well orchestrated press, which is why their strategy off that just defied belief. And it that transmitted, like, across the game. So much of what they did just didn't make any sense.
Any other stats, Mark?
Yeah, I just have another one I wanted to mention that Shore provided us with. There was a team at the weekend where I'm going to pick out the 2 big games, Kerry-Galway and Dublin-Donegal. One team in Dublin-Donegal conceded 3 free kicks in their own half. Can you guess who it was?
Donegal.
No, Dublin. Kerry-Galway. One team only conceded 5.
Oh, I'm going to say, I know who it is. Galway.
It was indeed.
The 2 teams that won the game.
Yes. Kerry conceded 11 in their own half, and Donegal conceded 6. So they conceded, both teams, Kerry conceded over twice as many and Donegal conceded twice as many. Donegal are pretty good now, to be fair, so they're only conceding 6. But again, scoring chances, you're gifting to the opposition.
Especially with a free taker like Shane Walsh, you're conceding a free in your own half, you're going to say a score, essentially. Like it just doesn't make sense. And it's...
Were the freeze from pressure, forced freeze or unforced freeze, I suppose,
It's what Kerry did. I can't understand. I'm still trying to understand why they played like this. So they played with... They had O'Shea, Burns and McCarthy in their half-forward line. And O'Brien, not but Burns in starts. And the three of them, the second they lost the ball, turned and were running back. So they were massively retreating. So what happened was, when Kerry had the ball, there was like a 60-metre gap between where they had the ball and Gainey and Clifford inside. And because of that, Bradshaw, who was playing centre-back for Galway, wasn't following O'Shea. So he just stood there. So Galway didn't even have to play with a sweeper. They just gave him a sweeper because O'Shea wasn't staying with his man. He was tracking back. Because you're so worried about the way Galway played, like this really mobile, fast-attacking unit. So and because of that, you're kicking a ball into a man just standing there in open space. And then, like, Kerry never... The great Kerry teams that we always talk about, who always somebody to hold the centre to bridge that gap between your full forward and your midfield or your rest of your team, like Declan Sullivan or Owen Brosnan or Colin Cooper did it, they totally abandoned it. They just played with nobody there. So there's this massive gap. And because of that, then you're constantly on the back foot. So you're retreating. So you're kicking the ball into space. You have no one to surrender. So you're surrendering possession to them constantly. And then when you do attack, Galway filter all their men back. And these same players are all outside the 45. With Gainey and Clifford in by themselves again, like they don't push up ever. If you're a sweeper, like if I'm defending against this, if I'm Galway, what I want is everybody out. I want to be facing everybody. If that's the situation, I'm happy. So if that's what you have, you play a load of players behind the ball. Why don't you put somebody beside them, like push up and occupy them instead of having every? That's why I can't understand it. I genuinely, I'd love because Memphis Morris, I'm gonna. Bombshell, he actually knows more about football than I do. So I'm trying to understand.
He did win in All-Ireland.
Why did they... I can't understand why they did it. I can't understand why you blink in that situation. You don't try and force their hand. Like, you don't push up. Because Donegal, the same thing. Like, if you're going to allow Dublin to filter men back and just stand and clog up space and have everybody outside possession and then eventually a pot shot from 50 yards... Just so easy. You just
it
make
was
it
a good example as well of Peter Canavan eat your heart out with his touchscreen at Sky Sports. Morris was sending me live screen grabs with circles and photoshops and everything. Sure, Kildare and Monaghan going, look at this. This is what you do against a blanket defence. And Kildare pushed up every single... they occupied every defender that had come back from Monaghan. They pushed up all the players on them and got an easy point out.
Because Lemmy's not a sweeper anymore. If you push those players up, he's not a sweeper. He becomes a man marker. And he's not obsessed with the ball. He's obsessed with you. So it becomes a man-on-man contest. So I just need one man to get away from his man. Like Clifford can do. Like he did it. He scored 1-5. But they didn't give him that chance because he's constantly trying to battle two or three players.
Mark, I'd never worry about Morris's journalistic integrity because I've never heard somebody so angry about how a team performed when the team that they performed badly against was his own county who he was cheering for.
That's the concern for Galway. Like Galway...
That's the concern. He's turning it back to a negative for Galway now, having bet Kerry for the first time in 70 years or something.
But Kerry were Kerry were awful. Like Kerry were absolutely awful. So much went wrong, and still Galway can bat by 3 points. The same thing. It's why you can't like jump to these like same with Roscommon. Like if we're to make conclusions out of Roscommon, what does it mean that Galway can beat them in the Connacht final and then Tyrone can do it to them?
Morris is just one sit down with Jim Gavin away from saying that performance against Kerry won't be good enough the next day in Hyde Park.
I don't want you to answer, but I'm not sure how any of what you said there is about Kerry winning freeze. or Galway winning freeze, but that was thanks. Go on.
If you're trying to attack and you kick a ball into a man in empty space and he's running back at you, you feel overloaded. Like you're kicking a ball into a sweeper's hands and then he starts running at you. You're like, shit, what do I do here? So you
drag him down. Drag him down.
Drag him down out there. It doesn't make any difference unless you get a black card. Anyway, all that's thanks to Shore, official statistics partner of the GEA.
Sinead is our sound woman here on Terra Stark, but she's gone to hear Beyonce. Beyonce.
New girl.
Beyonce.
Beyonce's not his wife, is that what you're saying?
Beyonce. So Sinead has gone to hear Beyonce.
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 Well, there's obviously a new girl and that.
Beyonce is playing.
Who's here?
Good night, Bianca.
Yeah, we'll all said it.
Good night, Bianca. See you, baby.
Emotional.
Very emotional.
Very emotional.
And I hope it doesn't happen to Bianca.
So, Maurice, I went down to Cork on Saturday.
You went three other people.
I did, yeah. I tweeted out on Saturday morning that Clare fans don't really have an excuse, that they'll be more than willing to come up to Dublin if they win, you know, for the semi-final. Got a lot of reaction, but I went down and got into the city and, God, there was a lot of people around. In Cork, you know, because Cork is, it's a long way, in the city, Cork City is a long way from Páirc Uí Chaoimh, really, and, you know, city centre, and it's a bigger place than like Thurles or wherever. Yeah, so, you know, like, we like being in city centre in Dublin. You don't really see much match crowd an hour and a half before. You will if you're around Drumcondra, you know. So I was like, have I got this completely wrong here? Is there going to be this like big crowd? And I think it might have been just the time I got in, because we walked down. There was a good crowd walking down to the match, and I walked in and the place was empty. And it was my first time in the new Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and it was really, really nice. Like, I mean, it's a beautiful venue. It's like a mini Croke Park. It's got like the proper seats, and it's the only other place in the country that has that. Really nice terracing, good facilities, everything like that. But the whole thing is grey and black. And like really clean, and there was no atmosphere because there was no people. And all I could think of was, this is like a Stepford Wives hurling ground. You know, it's like everything is just a little bit too kind of perfect and clean, and there's no kind of character or life to it. But I think that might be hard to blame Páirc Uí Chaoimh. There was 10,200 people at the game for an All-Ireland quarterfinal. All of the anger about Clare fans not turning up, one of the things that was thrown in the build-up was Wexford fans are great fans, they'll travel in force. There was no Wexford fans there. It was at best 50-50. I'd say 60-40 to Clare. Just incredibly disappointed.
Why? Like, what do you put it down to?
I've been thinking about this. Like, there's no real reason. Fans were pissed off that the game was in Cork on 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Now, there's definitely an element. There's definitely a lot of fans didn't go for, like, two of my uncles were at the game. I met them both separately, and both of them had decided at the last minute to go with their kids, but had taken the morning off work. They're both in construction. They both work Saturday mornings as a given.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a half day, whatever. They took it off, decided to go to the game. A lot of people won't have made that decision. You can understand why. I think a lot of Clare fans were pretty confident they'd win the game as well. That's not really good enough, but I'm just giving you an honest answer. And then the other side of it was, I think, so take away that legitimate reason that there's a smaller crowd, right? Then there was such anger all week about the game being in Cork at 3 o'clock on a Saturday that I think people just kind of decided not to go. And I think they overestimated how bad a decision that was in the end, and I ended up not supporting their team. And that's both of them. I think that's Wexford fans as well. Wexford fans, I don't think, were the most confident in the world. I think that might lead into it a little bit as well. I don't think they're particularly in love with the team or the way the team are playing at the moment. But I've never seen anything like it. It's 10,000. And then you go the next day, and it's fair enough, it's raining in Thurles, but it's good, perfect venue for both Kilkenny and Limerick, and there's like 19,000-20,000 there. Still not great, you know, and it's like you're seeing this brilliant match, one of the best games of hurling we'll ever see, especially in bad conditions, and they're hitting it into empty terraces, you know.
And it's kind of
sad to see.
It's why, like, you'd work, like, the a lot of people are using it as a stick to beat the football with, like, you know, the look, nobody's coming in to watch it because it's so boring anymore. It's like the same argument can't be extended to hurling. Like, there has to be, like, I know James O'Connor wrote in his Sunday Independent column this week, which is normally bang on the money. He was talking about the fact that if you, like, as a product, like, you're talking about fans who had four games, so that's just a natural increase in your pocket. Yeah. So as a product, to not have a double header was a really foolhardy decision, because it's not more enticing. Like, it's people say it's do or die, it's your last time to see your county, but the fact that you've gone to see them four times and then, like, especially if you're a Clare fan,
that's the sixth game.
You're probably anticipating that there's going to be another game after that. Realistically, like that's in the back of your mind.
And it is a trip. And don't forget, people aren't generally going on their own. They're bringing families and everything else. And like, I've spent a fortune this year. And I'm going up from Dublin. And I don't think that they should be thinking about the people who are expats or whatever, you know, that are coming from different places. You should only be thinking about who's coming from the counties and stuff like that. But I've spent a lot of money going to these games. The only game I missed was the first game, the first Páirc Uí Chaoimh Cork Clare game, because I was working that day, and you know, every other game I've been at, and it's cost an awful lot of money in petrol and match tickets and everything else that goes with going out for the day, and there is suddenly a lot of extra games, and like a lot more,
and
you know,
like, that's why like you kind of hope that maybe eventually this will traverse that it'll pay off in ticket prices. Like I spoke to family recently who went to the Galway Leinster final, the replay, and then went to watch the Galway in the Super 8s. So he paid 40 quid to go to the Leinster final. It was 30 quid to go to the replay. And then he's got up to Croke Park again, which is another 30 quid. You spend over 100 quid following your county in 3 weeks. Mm. Like he probably won't go to a game again for the rest of the year.
What did you think of the games?
The Wexford Clare game was poor. Just as a spectacle. Again, it happens. Nothing to do with Clare. I think just the way Wexford set up. It's kind of their inability. Jackie Turrell last night said on the Sunday game that it was a lack of fire on the pitch and on the sideline, which I thought was a really interesting line, that they just didn't seem like I know exactly what he meant, because even when it was so obvious that the sweeper wasn't working, there was no real emphasis to change it. There was like, it kind of was, we're going to go out with our, you know, you're not down with your boots on because you're not really playing it. So the other game was one of the best sporting spectacles of the year.
That was an outstanding game. Here's a stat for you that I don't think has been talked about. The first time since 1999 that Kilkenny will have gone 3 years without winning an All-Ireland. And first time in the Brian Cody era.
It's unbelievable when you think, I don't know about you, but as soon as Richie Hogan hit his goal, there's just this dawning sense, oh, here we go. Like, Limerick fell out a spirited effort, but they got, so for them to rally after that, like Morrissey's point straight away, it was unbelievable. Such a massive positive for Limerick.
Because they should have had three games won at that stage. If it wasn't for Owen Murphy, they would have. Owen Murphy put in one of the best goalkeeping performances you'll ever see, and suddenly Kilkenny are winning with a minute or two to go.
Kilkenny. Like, it's so weird that Kilkenny and Wexford went out at the same stages when you reflect on it, because Kilkenny have had in many ways, a wonderful season. Like, they were tipped to be relegated from the league, ended up winning it. A lot of people were unwriting for Leinster. They brought Galway to a replay. Could have won the first day, the second day, fair enough. Against Limerick, 5 minutes from the end, the game won, and then Limerick rally. Whereas, like, Wexford's really underperformed in Leinster league, which they was there probably for them to win it, bowed out in the semi-final. It's this thing of like taking them out of context, where each team came out. Like, and you know, we've been talking about a lot, like Cody trying to transition this team. I think they got a lot of really good young hurlers there. Richie Lahey, I think, is going to be a star.
They've got two or three stars to come out of that team, I think, that aren't yet, but I don't know. I think the jury's out on a lot of them not being a good hurling team. Not even possibly winning in All-Ireland. But the problem with these guys, it's so hard. They're coming in as this, like, Richie Hogan on his way out, still the most important player on the pitch. Colin Fennelly, you know, was in the Leinster final when he came on the Leinster final replay. And, you know, and obviously TJ, Pádraig Walsh, you know, a couple of others, Fogarty, Buckley. But other than that, you're talking about a load of new lads coming in together and trying to establish themselves. And, like, I just felt so sorry for, like, Billy Ryan, is that his name? And a couple of these guys who were just on, who just felt like they had to make this impression. They had to go and win it for Kilkenny. And it's like, for years and years and years and years, they were bringing in two, three lads who just had to do enough.
Yeah.
And then they had, TJ Reid had 5-6 years to become an established player. And then the pressure, then it's you. Then you have to do it. The onus is on you. We're not going to do it without you. And then come 2015, TJ Reid's the best hurler in the country, you know? But all these lads have to do it straight away now. It's just hard, you know?
And especially when you look at, like, it's mental to think. Like, there's four of those Limerick forwards between Kyle Hayes, you've got Morrissey, Hegarty, and not Flanagan. The four of them won an under 21 title 10 months ago. Mm. So it's between them, what, like 13, 14 points between the four of them, yeah, in one game. Like the transition that they've had has been instant. It's been this kind of Shane Downing, to have him coming off the bench, Casey coming off, yeah, the bench. Like
you can do it in Limerick, though. And I don't mean that. You know, in you, and you add in Keane Lynch into that, right? Yeah. As a kind of a young attacking force, the five of those guys. You can do that because who are you replacing? And I don't mean that in a negative way towards Limerick, but you're not replacing somebody who's won 9-10 All-Irelands. You're coming in and saying, do you know what? We're going to change. It's like what Dan Morrissey talked about after the game. We're going to change what Limerick are about and what Limerick are known for and all this. And we're the new generation. We're going to take it on. The Kilkenny guys have to do that by saying, we're going to keep everything the same. And we're going to be as good as what came before. It's easy for the Limerick guys to say we're going to be better than what's there before. It's not. It's as difficult to do on the pitch, but the pressure isn't as bad.
It's also interesting, like when you're, like you look at that, like Kilkenny also. Sorry, Limerick also won like the sideline battle. Like their subs they brought on were perfect. Downing and Casey.
We kind of questioned them at the time, I think, as well, because there was guys coming off that you felt were playing very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're thinking, oh, remember Michael Dignan was questioning.
Darragh Donovan had a stormer. You kind of think, why is he coming off right now? But all the changes were justified. There's also Chrissy O'Connor was writing that Paul Kinnerk was running out to the pitch, making calls. So at one stage in the first half, he ran into the pitch and made a call, shout, and all their forwards split and went to the line. So basically what they did was isolate Kyle Hayes on top of Buckley to have nobody else around them because they knew one-on-one he'd win his ball. So he cleaned out Buckley for puck outs there. Like those kind of small little, like, they're the things that I love. Like they're the kind of the small aspects that the sideline can control, like Kinnerk running down to the pitch. And the amount of times he's getting mentions is really interesting. Like I know he did some fierce work with Clare, but there's obviously something going on there. Like there's something building in Limerick.
It's so exciting. Limerick and Cork in the other semi-final now, which was probably the best game of the year. This weekend probably rivaled it. But can't wait for it. Can't believe it's so strange that Kilkenny are out, but it's such an exciting finish to the hurling season. But we'll talk more about that next week. Mark's back from his nap. And we're gonna look at the spreads for guess the spreads for week two of the Super 8s in a minute.
Well, you were fucked over the line twice. Fucked over the line like you'd catch a fucking loaf of bread and fucked you over the line with his shorts up. And what that does is it lifts the opposition. We don't want to see no Westmeath man fucked about. Is that clear now, Alan? No more.
Right, a little bit earlier than usual on the show this week, we're gonna look at the spreads for this week's Super 8s. Morris undefeated. Mark off a win against me last week.
Yep.
We're going to start on Saturday evening. Roscommon versus Donegal at De Hyde. Morris, going to start with you.
I'm going to say Donegal -3.
Mark.
I'm going to say Donegal -3 as well. I'm not going to go different because that was my idea and I didn't want to go down to an early defeat.
Well, you should have went different. It's Donegal -4, so... The under the new rules established by Mark Farley last week, that means that there's now 2 points on offer for the closest in this. 3 points, including the bonus point for someone who gets it exact. And it's Mark's turn to go first. Tyrone at Healy Park hosting the Dubs.
Dublin -5.
Maris?
I'd written -5 too, but I can't let it play out like that. So I'll go Dublin -6.
You should have did what Mark did. It's Dublin -4, which means Mark goes into a 2-0 lead. Could Morris be facing his first defeat?
I was thinking -4 as well.
He might need to get it exact. Yeah, like, sold out, by the way. Like, talk about, you know, whatever we're talking about, boring games, negative football, anything like that. Give me a full crowd in a small venue and I don't care what kind of football is being played. I can't wait for it. Right, let's go to Sunday. Kildare in Newbridge, speaking of full grounds, against Morris's beloved but as yet untested Galway team. Morris, your turn to go first. You'd want to get this one.
Okay. Galway -2.
Mark.
Galway -3.
Morris is back in the game. Oh, no. It's Galway -2. It's 2-2 going into the last.
That's incredible.
This has been the most dramatic game we've ever played. except for last week.
Monaghan against Kerry.
Monaghan Kerry in Clonus. What a match. What a way to finish the weekend. And Mark,
this could be anyone.
You're going to go first here, Mark.
After last again, surely Monaghan should be favourites for this.
They're
not going to be.
They're not going.
Should be. Kerry minus one.
No, bigger.
It is bigger. I know it's bigger. Why did I say minus one? Can I change?
Well, what's he going to do then? It's a draw.
It just has to be bigger. So I'm going to say minus two.
Minus two is right. Because I thought he was going to go minus three.
I thought
that would have been so stupid. So Maris wins 4-2 in the end, coming back from 2-0 down, coming back from the dead.
I immediately regretted saying minus one.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
A case of daylight robbery. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful.
This is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
The decision
that is disgraceful.
This is all wrong. This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Now, before we go, we do want to talk about the club fixture list and everything like that. We got a letter from, we got an email, we didn't get a letter, it's not 1986. We got an email from a Westmeath junior footballer who's had his times changed and he's really pissed off about things. And hilariously and ironically, you're not going to be part of this conversation, Mark, and this is not planned.
No, this is just genuine. Morris and myself, I think, went a wee bit too deep into the stats there.
Yeah, a little bit too deep, yeah.
This is ran over, and I've got Junior B Championship tomorrow evening, and I won't have time to get home in time to go to the physio, so I have to come this evening.
To go to the physio to go and play the Junior B at home, travelling up and down the country. Your story is this man's story and is the country's story, yeah. Mark.
Although, to be fair, at least Cavan County Board had the good diligence to tell us what the time and date of the game would be. I'd say a good week in advance, maybe 6-7 days anyway, compared to this poor Westmead lad. So best luck, lads.
We've lost Mark. So now that we're alone, Morris, we did talk about this. It was up on Balls.ie yesterday. You may have seen it, but we got an email in, and it was just something that I think summed up exactly what's going on in a lot of club players around the country and how they're going while the super eights, the extra eight games in the football championship start, while we're on the back of having already had the extra eight games in the hurling championship, which have meant that in hurling counties there have been very few breaks for club activity over the last few months. So while it's a shortened season, things seem to be worse than ever, at least anecdotally, and this email definitely bears that out. It's from a junior footballer, a junior player in Westmead, who's just on the brink of really no longer wanting to play the game. So he says, this morning, Monday 16th of July at about 10 a.m, I received a text message from our club secretary stating that our next championship game had been brought forward by 30 minutes. Now, that wouldn't usually be too big a deal, except for the fact that the match in question was due to take place tomorrow at 7 p.m. The county board thought that it would be fitting to have a championship match at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday evening and then bring it forward by 30 minutes to a 6:30 throw-in. Any player knows that you have to be at the field at least 45 minutes before throw-in. Does the GEA not realise that players need to work for a living and that not everybody has a cushy job driving around their sponsor cars? I myself work in Dublin and I'm on the starting team. I'm one of the older guys on the team, so I need some extra stretching and physio before the warm-up, much like Mark. This means that for tomorrow's game, with a throw-in at 6:30, I will have to be at the pitch at 5:15. Because I'm coming from Dublin, I'll need to leave work at 3:30. Luckily for me, my job permits that I'll be able to leave. My manager is a big GAA supporter and has no problem with me going, but this is not the case for other guys on the team. Another grievance I have is that while we played our last championship match a month ago, after tomorrow night, our next championship game is on Sunday at 7 p.m. We wait for a month and then two games come along in 5 days. Why? Also, this weekend is the first week of the CIF holidays, when a lot of people have to take their holidays. It's the only time they get away all summer. Now they can't leave until after the game. Why have the game at 7 p.m. on a Sunday? Why not earlier in the day or on a Saturday evening so people can enjoy Sundays with their families? On two occasions this year, this is separate again, on two occasions this year, players rushed home on a midweek night to play a league game, and both times, with the players on the pitch, no referee showed up. There have been occasions that championship fixtures are only given to the club 2 to 7 days before a game. I work two jobs, and more often than not, each week I have to reorganise what times and days I work because games are given on such short notice and training needs to be moved around because of them. Why can these fixtures not be dictated at the start of the year with some floating weeks for games that need to be postponed? I also play a bit of rugby for a small club. At the start of the year, we get a list of dates. We have the matches and a list of dates, and we can actually plan our lives around it. I'm pretty sure that every other club and county has the same issues. Kind regards, disgruntled and tired GAA player. Isn't that sad?
And like, beyond sad, the saddest thing of all is that it's just so familiar. Like,
it's familiar. That's why this isn't a unique story in any way, shape or form. It's everybody. It's universal.
And it's like I think this year was supposed to be the trial run. Like, the GAA said, we're going to address the club pair. This is what kind of... And for, like, I really hope that at some point this year, the kick comes from true, that how important the CPA is going to be for club pairs. Like, this is a body that it wants to represent your views. It will carry motions to Congress. The same county boards who fix that game for 30 minutes earlier on a work day are the same people who are sending delegates who are voting down CPA motions at Congress. It's the same body. They don't even believe the CPA is necessary. They think it's all the one umbrella, that there's no need for the CPA. And when you hear, like, it's why anybody who's listening, like, I can't stress the importance of an organization like the CPA, of joining it and of rallying your county board or delegates to go and support them in Congress. They don't even have official recognition yet.
No. Like,
They were laughed out of Congress, their motions last year. They voted, one of them was just in favour of transparency so that we could record votes, know who voted for what. That was voted down. Because it's voted down, they can't re-propose it for 3 years. Like, that's where we're at right now. That rallying cry is familiar to club players across the country. And until you rally behind an organisation that is willing to carry, you know, your interest, that will is its interest are the club players' interest. It's so important that the CPA gets the recognition and support it deserves.
Yeah, I just don't understand why this is taking so long and why there is such resistance to it. And I don't think there's an open resistance. I don't like being too unfair on the GA in this, because there's this idea of the Machiavellian shadowy characters in offices in Croke Park looking down and dismissing these players like the shit in their shoe, and you can guarantee they don't think like that, and they do want to fix this, but the urgency I'm not sure is there. But also I don't know if the imagination is there. I don't know if the willingness to take this by the scruff of the neck and do something about it is, because they will say that their new master fixture plan and all of this helps the club game, but why then leave it in control of the county boards to change games and to have, you know, have, as Man suggests there, have weeks off. Like, you know, that, right, okay, there's going to be postponements. There's going to be, you know, like, small towns that have bereavements that are going to not be able to fill a fixture. That's all fine. Let's not be kicking people out of championships. But let's make sure that we have a set fixture list that guys know you are going to be playing nine games in these 12 weeks.
And
then you have 8 weeks off, yeah. Something like that.
That's the nobody issue. That is the lack of any overarching foresight on this. So the, like, April for clubs is a great idea, but if you're not going to enforce it, it's totally redundant. It becomes a waste of time, as we saw this year. So inter-county teams changed away, so championships were pushed back. So the nobody issue is that there is no overarching hierarchy. We're going to, like, county boards are going to wilt to inter-county managers. That's not a new tale. But until somebody comes in and implements, and all it has to be is a clear outlined fixture plan at the start of the year, like a master fixture plan. Yeah. That's all it would take. Like, that's,
yeah. And not to mention, by the way, like, county boards will wilt to clubs as well. And, you know, so it works both ways. So
yeah.
So you're talking about championship games where inter-county players have been available, and Brian Cody is a bad example because he never minds, but Dave Fitzgerald, whoever, doesn't want a championship game played 3 weeks before his team's out in the championship. Grant, that needs to be centrally organised, that happens regardless of what the county board does. Croke Park aren't as afraid of these managers as the county boards are. But also the clubs, they're the people who have the influence. So they want to say, we don't want to play we've a really good chance in the league this year. We've won our first three games. We want to get promoted. I'm not playing it without my county player. Well, I'm sorry, but we can't actually deal that way. It's not fair on everybody else in your league who will have to wait around for these games. You know, so that needs to be taken out of county boards. County boards are basically being influenced from both sides. And if it's taken out of their hands completely, Yeah. Just have a fixtures officer, like, you know, or like, you know, maybe it's a series, a fixture officer for each county that's employed by Croke Park. I don't know. There's lots of solutions. But my issue, even outside of what the obvious solutions are why do we have people playing these sports who love it, who grow up with it, and it's supposed to be this enjoyable thing. It's supposed to be this incredible thing that you do, that, you know, you play as a kid and you grow up and then you play with your parish and you play with your community as an adult. And it's like one of these, like, it's such a rare thing for you to be able to do. Why are people like almost longing for retirement? It's a cruel, cruel way to enjoy your sporting life, which is a one-off and will not be there for the majority of your life.
And I mean, I know, like, I totally understand the view, like, your point that you don't want to demonize the GAA on this, but like there's a lot of issues and there's no real recognition that there's a problem. Like, we don't.
That's a big problem.
That's the nub of it. That's why the CPA is so important, which goes back to my first point here. Like, until they get the support they need, then all of these conversations and these kind of letters, it's going to become an annual thing and we're going to end up in a hopeless cycle.
Yeah, we might already be in it, but anyway, what a positive way to end the show today.
I hope you win your match, listener, or letter.
Yeah, it could be on. It's on, he's already at the pitch, I think. It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday here, so he's definitely at least on the road. So I don't think he's going to hear this, unfortunately, before we finish. But so that's it. I hope Mark's well on his way to physio now. I hope he wins his Junior B game. Morris, congratulations on yet another fantastic win in the Spreads game. And
this is like the Dublin juggernaut. Eventually they're going to be arguing to take me out of my HQ.
Exactly. Last thoughts, double?
No. The hurlers will do it. I don't need the football as well.
The hurlers will do it, he says. Right. I'm going to hold off on the
stig.
Yeah, I'm going to hold off on everything now for until next week, in which I will have my case as to why Clare, the so-called weaker county in this particular conversation, can do it. As Sherlock Nam would say, against Galway next week. But until then, we'll keep me powder dry for 1 week anyway. Take it easy.